Welcome to Look to the Moon podcast, bringing together two friends with stories that need sharing. Join us, Jodie and Nicole, as we navigate life after loss, discussing topics around birth, trauma, and baby loss, and providing a safe space for others to share their stories. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Look to the Moon podcast. We are on episode 13. I'm here with Nicole.
Hi, everyone.
We have just finished an interview with the lovely Kira, who lives over in Ireland. So we've gone over to a slightly different country, even though we were stateside last time. We're in Ireland this time. And that was a really emotional episode, wouldn't you agree?
I was just, I said it in the podcast with Kira, didn't I? Like, if anyone that listens to this podcast doesn't cry, there's something wrong with you. Because God, all three of us were like, just sat there crying through the whole story. Like, what? She is an absolutely amazing mum and woman, and the love that poured out of Kira when she's talking about her beautiful son Luca. Wait till you listen to it, is all I can say. Like, goodness.
It was just, like you said, it was so raw.
Pure emotion.
Yeah, and and she was worried, wasn't she, at the beginning about getting emotional. And we were like, look, you know, we're not talking about, you know, bog standard daily occurrences. No. We're talking about severely traumatic experiences. And, you know, she goes into a great amount of detail about the lead up to her having her son Luca. And there's a bit of a trigger warning in this episode, because we discuss brain damage, HIE, baby loss, and you know, the story that she told, I know that you related to a large amount of it, and I also related a large amount to it, and I think that made it her story, it touched us,
definitely.
Because it was, I hate to say it was like a merge of both our stories, because she experienced from a birth and slightly post-birth perspective was hugely similar to what I went through with my daughter. And then the death of her son, Luca, when she was discussing sort of the experience she had, you know, sort of the hours afterwards, and a lot of that, I saw similarities between her story and your story as well.
Yeah, and then like a lot of the emotions that you're feeling, like post loss or post death of your baby, like a lot of those emotions and things that Kira was discussing, it really hits home, and like I related to so many things that she was saying. And I think, like we've said, you know, that's the whole point of this podcast, is that when you're going through and you're so stuck in that grief, you feel like the only person in the world going through it. And like this podcast just shows, and like just meeting with and talking to Kira today shows that we're not alone, and there's so many, although our experiences are so individual, there's so many similarities in a lot of our stories and our feelings and emotions that go along with that. She's just amazing. And like she's not even a year into her grief and the loss of Luca, and here she is sat here with us talking and holding herself so well. Telling a story, although I know she won't think she did, but she really did. And like you say, the detail and depth that she went into that, like you can hear the love in a in a voice. It was just lovely, so sad but so lovely.
It's just her story in particular has really sort of resonated with me, and it was also lovely to hear that she'd found comfort in the podcast as well. You know, and it sort of reaffirms why we started doing it because she said
Yeah,
that she
definitely.
is, I've just reading the end of her email now. She put, "I found great comfort in listening to your podcast. And when I had a placenta abruption, I craved wanting to hear from someone else who went through it too. I've now experienced a neonatal loss and a very early term loss, and I feel so isolated, and I'm sure others do too, which is why I wanted to reach out to you guys and share my
Yeah.
story." And that just literally sums up why we started it. And I feel honoured. She says she feels honoured to sit with us. I feel honoured
Oh
that
no, yeah, we're the ones that are honoured. She shared that story with us.
That
Yeah.
she felt strong enough and brave enough to put her words in an email and in down in writing for one, and then taking the time to sit and talk to us as well, which I'm just quite touched by that episode, I would
Yeah,
say.
definitely. Yeah.
And it's definitely one to listen to, and it's a long episode, just another
Yeah.
warning for you. But as we've said in the podcast, it would be a disservice to Kira, her family, and to baby Luca to try and cut it down. Every
Yeah.
minute is valid and is a part of their story. So hopefully, even if you have to listen to it in two parts, or maybe I'll split it up into two
Yeah.
parts.
Yeah.
But yeah, we hope you find some comfort in listening to Kira and Luca's story. And make sure you have some tissues ready.
Oh, yes. And probably some chocolate to cheer you up after. Because that's what we always do.
Yeah,
Well, I
basically.
do.
Yeah, why not? I'm
Yeah.
not on the hard stuff. I'm on a glass of Vimto, so
Oh, well.
never mind.
Yeah, but yeah, thank you again, Kira, for sharing your story,
Yes.
and sharing Luca with us all.
Yes, and have fun. No, enjoy. No.
No.
Find comfort, as we always say,
Yeah.
in listening to Kira and Luca's story, and we will catch you on the next episode.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi everyone, welcome to Look to the Moon podcast. We've got the lovely Kira here with us from Ireland. Hi Kira.
Hi guys, how are you?
We're good, how are you?
I'm okay. As I said, I am a bit nervous, but I'm glad to be
Oh.
here with you guys and just
Yeah.
appreciate you giving me this chance to share my story and my Lucas story.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Well, thank you for reaching out to us and sharing your story already with us. But more importantly, we're going to talk about your story and your boy Luca today, and you're going to share your story with us. So, like you say, don't be nervous. It's fine. It's going to be dead casual, and you just start wherever you want with your story. Tell us a little bit about you, your pregnancy, and your journey with Luca.
Okay, so Luca is my third baby. I have a 11-year-old. Actually, she turned 11 yesterday, and I
Can I
have
just interrupt you there and say you don't look old enough to have an 11-year-old? You so don't.
No.
Tequila. Sorry, that was my interruption, which was about 30 seconds in.
Yeah.
Well, see that I like that though, because this makes it feel more calm and casual, you know? So I was 24 having Mila, and then 3 years later I had another little baby girl. I was 27 having her, and she was actually a she was a breech baby, so I had to have a C-section on her. And then myself and my husband got married in 2023, and we decided to try for another baby. Took us a few months, but I mean, not it was it was it was not that long. We on Christmas Day, then we actually found out that we were going to have a little boy. And we, after having two girls, we were absolutely delighted that we were having a little boy. And then unfortunately in the February then, so I was like 26 weeks pregnant, my husband actually had a stroke.
Oh,
I don't think I actually included that when I was
no,
chatting to
no,
the
you
guys.
didn't. No.
I know, and I was kind of like, that is a big part of the story
Yeah.
because I was obviously so stressed during pregnancy. Now look, he made a full recovery. He spent 2 weeks in hospital. He did originally lose the ability to walk. His voice and his vocal cords were all kind of changed, but he came around and he was so adamant to get better for his two girls and soon to be baby boy. For those 2 weeks that he was in hospital, I was so stressed out. I was so worried. I actually finished up work then. I couldn't continue to work. So I am a social care worker. I work in a residential unit for adults with physical and intellectual disabilities. So it's quite, it's quite challenging and they're long shifts. They're like a 15-hour shift. Craig was also a shift worker too. So what we used to work opposite each other, so we never had to worry about childcare. Our oldest daughter, Mila, as well, has a diagnosis of autism and epilepsy. So it was just always kind of easier for one of us to be at home with her. So I went off work sick due to stress. And then when it was Craig's time to return to work, he wasn't actually allowed to shift work anymore, just for health reasons. So he went on day shifts, which meant then that I couldn't return to work because we wouldn't have ever been able to organize childcare. And plus, I was due my baby boy in May. So I was like, well, look, I'm going on maternity leave soon anyway. My pregnancy with Luca was actually it was fine. I did have hyperemesis. I did have that on Mila and Gracie, and then on Luca. It nearly got worse each pregnancy. On Luca, it was really bad, and I was on medication from an early gestation on Luca. And yeah, it was a fine, easy going pregnancy. I did have my placenta was to the front. Is that a an anterior placenta? Budget away.
Nicole.
Well,
I
apparently I have that as well, and I don't know what it's called. Oh,
I always forget.
I think it's anterior and posterior is at the back,
Is that
right?
the back? Okay, yeah, that sounds
Sounds
about right. Yeah.
I'm going to
So
Google
it,
it for
I could
context.
Okay. I could always kind of feel him moving, but it wasn't the same as how I felt with Mila and Gracie.
Front wall of the uterus. Anterior.
Okay, yeah. I loved being pregnant. I loved being pregnant on Mila and Gracie, but I think I was a little bit younger on them, and I will admit, I definitely took conceiving and pregnancy and labor for granted. I never really, with Mila and Gracie, we conceived so fast. And then with Luca, it took us 5 months to conceive Luca, which I know isn't that long, but when you're used to conceiving straight away, and I was a little bit older, I was 33 at this point. And I remember actually, even though I was 2 years off, in Ireland, I don't know if it's the same in the UK, but when you're 35, it's considered a geriatric pregnancy. Yeah.
Same over
So
here, yeah.
geriatric, like it's
Oh,
just,
it's just such an insult, isn't it? It's like,
I know, and I
oh,
still feel
crazy.
like it, but like sometimes I still feel like I'm 17.
We do too.
Some people might say I still act it as well, but that's another story. But I would have been 34 when he was born. So I remember I was given a leaflet on geriatric pregnancies and, just saying you can be considered a little bit more high risk, but everything is fine. All my checkups were fine. And then I had actually, so because my middle daughter was a C-section baby, she was 7 at this point. The conversation of whether to have another C-section was had, but I think I was about 37 weeks, and but Lucas, his head was down, he was engaged, he wasn't breech, he wasn't, he was in the right position, and I wanted to have a vaginal delivery. So I was like, look, if that's the way if he's ready to go and down in that position, I want to go ahead for a vaginal delivery. And they actually said I was an ideal candidate for a VBAC. So I was happy with that. I went in to the hospital for my 38-week checkup. Everything was fine. Sorry, I should mention as well, twice throughout my pregnancy, I bacteria was found in my urine. And I was treated with antibiotics. And once the antibiotics finished its course, my urine was tested again, and it was clear. In one of the urine tests, there was a very, very small trace of protein found. But again, that was tested again. It was sent off to the lab, and it came back clear. It doesn't really have much relevance to the story, but I also feel like, I don't know, sometimes I think, is there a connection there? So I went in for my 38-week checkup, and I was so uncomfortable. I was so big as well. It was actually that was really one of the reasons why I loved this pregnancy, was I was very obviously pregnant, whereas on Mila and Gracie, people didn't realize I was pregnant. But with Luca, I had a big bump, and I loved showing it off, but I was really uncomfortable. So on my 38-week checkup, it was I had said, look, when I'm in next week, can I have a sweep? And they were like, yeah, no problem. So I was due to go in on the 10th of May for a checkup and also a sweep. And then on the 9th of May, so I was 30, sorry, I'm getting my weeks mixed up. Yeah, sorry, I was 38 plus 6 on the 9th of May. And I was Craig was in work at the time. But he was back working, but he was doing a day shift. So he would have been home normally at about 5, 6 o'clock. And my daughters were doing a gymnastics class, and they were sitting in gymnastics class, and I was in the car. It was actually one of my favorite times, the two of them in gymnastics, and I would sit in my car and I would listen to a podcast for an hour to myself, and I loved it. I used to get myself a
At
donut
least.
and a yeah. I used to get myself a donut and like some sort of a fizzy drink and sit in the car while they were gone off, and I'd listen to a podcast. So just as they got back into the car, and it was actually at 4:15 because that's the time their gymnastics finished that, I started to feel really unwell. I was really dizzy. I felt really nauseous. I felt really weak. I was shaky. I could feel kind of beads of sweat around my mouth and my head. I knew I just didn't feel right. But I don't really know what came over me. And this is something that I hate thinking about too much, but I drove home. I just kind of went into this like autopilot mode, and I was like, I just need to go home. I need to go home.
And I don't
And I
think that's
remember.
anything to be ashamed of, because I think your
No.
home is your safe place, and
Yeah,
that's and
yeah.
you're obviously. Your brain is starting to go, something's not right. I'm not feeling well. If I get home, we can fix whatever it is. I
Yeah.
know that it's totally unrelated, but I've been driving literally, and I've been feeling unwell whilst driving, and I was only 10 minutes from home. And rather than pull over, I was like, no, I'll just get home really quickly just to
Yeah,
get
that's
home,
exactly how
because
I felt.
yeah. And I think everyone will understand
Yeah,
that
yeah.
urge.
Mummy instincts as well. Like you had your two girls with you, so you knew that something was going to happen to you. You wanted to get your girls home and safe.
To their safe place as well.
Yes, exactly.
So it's about a 30-minute drive from gymnastics to my home, and I'd say we got about halfway, and I rang my husband Craig, and the phone was connected to the car, so the girls, my daughters, could hear the phone call. So I was trying to stay calm in front of them, and I was like, hey, listen, you need to come home. And he was like, is everything okay? And I said, yeah, I think so, but Craig, you need to come home now. And he was like, okay, I'm on the way. So I continued to drive, and to be quite honest, a lot of that drive is quite blurry. I can't really remember it, and I just think how lucky, in a way, I am that all of us could have died. I could have crashed that car. Like, I could have killed me, my baby, and my daughters as well, because I just continued to drive. And I remember, even I got to the entrance of my housing estate, and we have traffic lights, and the lights were actually red to come into my estate. And I was like, right, Kira, you need to get in. If it's clear to go, you need to just go. And I did. I broke the traffic light. I broke the red light and I just went in. Now, it's a very quiet road. So I was very conscious of, I was looking around to see what was around me. Pulled into my garden and, my daughters are 10 and 8, 10 and 7 at the time. So they were able to get out of the car and stuff themselves. And thank God for that, because I've always kind of thought if they were smaller and, oh, like they would have been just left in the car seat, because I couldn't. I just needed to, I don't know what it was. I needed to get into the house. So I actually thought I needed to go to the toilet as well. And I was like, mate, am I just constipated and I really need to go to the toilet? Or because my tummy was really sore as well. And I actually remember up high, like on my, the only way I can really kind of say where it was, it's like under my right boob. I remember I thought it was the baby's foot like kicking up, but it was so sore up in my my right rib area, up high. And I was kind of trying to push, if it was a foot, I was trying to push it back down. So anyway, I went into the house and the girls did follow me. And I was kind of able to say to them, I actually have watched in my Ring doorbell me getting out of the car and me saying to them, girls, come on in, follow me. I don't remember any of that. I went into the house, sat down on the toilet, and I don't remember then anything that happened between sitting on the toilet and waking. I woke up then on the ground in my bathroom. I had actually fallen forward off the toilet and I hit my face off my sink that's there, so my face was so sore. When I had woke up, sorry.
Oh, take your time, Kira. It's okay.
Take a breath if okay.
When I had woke up, there was my waters had broke, so the floor was soaking, and I could the girls were knocking on the door, Mammy, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine, I'll be out now, one second. And actually I was then I could hear Craig on my phone. He was like, Kira, Kira. And I don't even remember that call coming in, answering him. He told me he rang me. And while he was on the phone to me, I collapsed. And then he hung up and he called an ambulance and called me back again. And that was this call that I was on. So I came round to him calling me and he was like, here, an ambulance is on the way. And I rang. So I have two really good friends in the estate. And I knew one of them, she's actually, she was pregnant at the time as well. She would have been off work. So he said, she's on her way over to you now. An ambulance is on the way and I'm on my way too. So my friends had literally rushed into the house and they told me that I was grey. I had no colour in my face at all. I was still in the bathroom. I was on all fours. I was kind of afraid to move, but I still felt so unwell. And I had actually said to them, I said, sorry, that friend and her sister had came. So my two friends had came and I said, girls, there's something wrong. This isn't right. There's something wrong here. And they were like, no, everything's fine, Kira, you're okay. Here's some orange juice to try and bring your sugars back up. You'd be okay. And then the ambulance had actually called me and asked me, could I feel baby's head or was there any blood? And I couldn't feel baby's head, and there was no blood. So I was kind of like, maybe everything is okay because there's no blood. But I still felt really unwell. The ambulance took 35 minutes. And I remember my friend also saying to me, do you want to just get in the car and I'll bring you to the hospital? And sometimes I think, would I have been quicker just going with her? But I felt safe waiting for paramedics. I was like, they're medical experts. They know what they know what they're dealing with. And also when I get into an ambulance, they can drive a hell of a lot faster than you can.
And what was the dis sort of distance in time from where you were to the hospital?
So I am about, if I was to drive into the hospital, I'm about a 35-minute drive, and but with an ambulance drives in, it can be, I was there in, I think, 15 minutes when the ambulance did bring me in. So the ambulance had came, and I remember the paramedics, put, like, they wanted to have a look at my tummy, and it was my first time seeing my tummy, and it just looked weird. The only way I can really describe how my tummy looked was like it was vacuum packed. And it was so hard. And then I started having contractions, but the contractions were so hard to time because that pain up on the upper right of my bump was still there constantly. It never went away. And I remember saying to the paramedic, there's something not right. Why aren't my contractions going away? This isn't, I've had my first daughter was a natural delivery, was a vaginal delivery. This isn't how it is. And she was like, every birth is different, Kira, it's okay. And she gave me some gas and air, got into the ambulance. I'd be put on a stretcher into the ambulance. And then my poor girls, they'd seen my daughters, they had seen me. They put on a stretcher and put into an ambulance. And at this point, Craig still wasn't home. And I can't really remember a lot of, like, this story has kind of been relayed to me back from, like, my friends are telling me about it. I never even said goodbye to Mila and Gracie. I don't remember thinking about needing to say goodbye. I was just put straight onto an ambulance, and I also didn't really. I'm glad that they had my other friend there who kept them entertained in the sitting room, but they still seen me out the sitting room window and going out into the ambulance. And when I watch it back in my Ring doorbell again, I can hear my friend being like, "Mommy's going to have the baby. She's going in to have your brother." And then they get so excited. One friend came with me, and one friend stayed with my daughters. And the friend that came with me, she actually rang my husband, and she was like, "Craig, we're on the way to the hospital now. You may as well just meet us there." So we arrived to the maternity hospital at 6 p.m., and I was rushed straight through, and they had checked for baby's heart rate, and they could find it, but it was so faint, and his rate was so low. It was a really slow heart rate. So they had called for a Cat 1 emergency C-section. And I just remember the panic and everybody just running into the room. And I was so scared. And they had asked me, did I have any jewelry on? I had my wedding ring on and my engagement ring. And the girl was trying to be so gentle with taking it off, but I ripped it off. And I was like, we need to, if there's something wrong, we need to get to him. And I also remember they had tried to measure how dilated I was. And when she had finished doing that, I felt a warm sensation around my legs. And I said, "Is that blood?" And because I knew my waters had already gone, and it was blood. So again, sorry, that's when they called for an emergency C-section. And then I was 2.5 hours later then, I woke up and Craig was beside me, and I said, "Where's the baby?" And he said, "He's very, very sick, Kira. He's in NICU and he's very, very sick. And you're very lucky to actually still be here." I was like, "What happened?" And he said, "You had what's called a placenta abruption." And then Craig broke down. He couldn't get his words out. So my obstetrician had came over then, and she tried to explain it to me. And I had just woken up from a general anaesthetic, so I was very confused. And then I'd ask again, "Where's the baby?" I kept kind of forgetting what they had just told me. I have since obviously found out that I had it's called a complete concealed placenta abruption. So it's where the placenta rips away from your uterus, and your placenta is obviously what gives your baby the nutrients and the blood flow and their oxygen. So when that rips away from the uterus, from where your baby is, they're not getting any of that. They're not getting nutrients, blood flow, oxygen. And I never ever heard of a placenta abruption before, ever. And even when they, when they were trying to explain it to me what it was, I still was like, what is that? Like, how did this happen and why did it happen? They had also told Craig and my mom as well, because Craig had called everyone to say what was going on. And poor Craig, like, I do think about him as well. He told me that Luca was born, sorry, at 6:24 p.m. So we arrived at the hospital at 6 p.m. and he was born at 6:24 p.m. And he was 7 pounds 7. He was my biggest baby. And Craig got to see him. He was put into an incubator and they were bringing him out and bringing him up to NICU. And the paediatrician had actually stopped, and I actually think this is a lovely part of it, but the paediatrician shook Craig's hand and said, "Congratulations, you have a beautiful baby boy." And he said, "But I do have to let you know he's very, very sick. Unfortunately, he was unresponsive when he was born, so they had to resuscitate him. So his Apgar score was 0 when he was born. And it took them, I think, 6 to 7 minutes to resuscitate him and get a heartbeat. But even when they did, he never cried. He didn't open his eyes. They got his heart going again. So Craig got to see him for a couple of minutes and he was rushed up to NICU. And Craig asked the paediatrician, "How's Kira?" And the paediatrician had said, "Look, I'm Luca's doctor. They're still in there with Kira. That's all I know. I don't really know much. Kira's doctor or someone who's looking after Kira will be out soon." And Craig was left sitting there for over 2 hours and he hadn't been given any update on me. And because we had had Gracie at a C-section and she was a planned C-section, he remembers, he was with me for that. And he remembers when him and the baby Gracie they went off while I was in recovery, I think, but he was like, "Here, that was only for a half an hour." So I knew the longer he was like, I knew this wasn't normal for the baby to be born and them to be still working on you for over 2 hours. So a doctor had finally came out to Craig and said, "We have stabilized Kira." And Craig was like, "What do you mean, stabilized her?" And they said, "She has lost a lot of blood and we've had to give her over, I think it's 3 liters of a blood transfusion, and she had two very large blood clots. So she's doing okay." But they had said to Craig, if there was any more blood loss, it could have been a very different story. And one particular doctor then had said to my mom, "If Kira had been 5 minutes longer, she probably wouldn't be here. She probably wouldn't have survived." I didn't know this at the time, but my blood pressure, I was internally bleeding, so my blood pressure was so low, which is why I was feeling unwell. That's where all the symptoms had started. I was obviously internally bleeding and then forming two blood clots up here in that area where I was sore. Sorry, I'm doing it in the when I had came around and I was put into intensive care then. And I'm not sure, in Ireland it's just a maternity hospital, so it's not a general hospital, it's just a maternity hospital. So I was put on the gynae ward, which I'm very appreciative of, because there's no bit. I wasn't put on an antenatal ward or a postnatal ward, or there was no babies around, and I was given my own private room. But unfortunately, it's very close to to near theatre, so I would hear women who've just had a C-section with their babies. I'd hear the cry, and that was so tough to be listening to that. And my baby it was in NICU. I think at about 11 p.m. then I had begged, could I go up and see Luca? And they agreed. I'm sorry, from the moment I was put into my room, I had asked, could I go see Luca? And they were like, Kira, you can't, like you're really unwell. But then finally they let me at about 11 o'clock, and I was brought up in a wheelchair, and I had my drips and everything ha hanging out of me. And when I w and I'm cra sorry, Craig had also shown me a photograph of him on his phone, and I was like, Craig, he's perfect. Like, how is he so sick? I just didn't understand how this big, perfect baby they were telling me was so sick. And when I went up and I got to the doors of NICU, I could, it was like this primal instinct of just, I felt like an animal being trying to find her cub. It was, I was looking around, scanning the room. All I wanted to do was get up out of that wheelchair and run to him. He hadn't been given, we hadn't named him yet. So when we just seen baby Spain at the end of his at the end of his incubator. And I went over to see him, and he had like a wrap around his belly and around his head. So he was getting the cooling treatment. So I know you've spoke about that before. It's where they try to prevent any further brain damage from happening. Unfortunately, it can't
It
what am I
can't
trying to say?
cure, it can't,
Yeah.
yeah, it can't reverse, yeah. Because my daughter had this cooling therapy, and they made it very clear to me when she started that treatment that it doesn't do anything to the damage that is already sustained. It just protects the brain from further damage, sort of
Yeah,
like
and that's
it.
what it was explained to me as well.
Yeah.
And I remember actually the midwife who was working on this particular night shift, she was actually working for the following three night shifts as well. She was just an absolute angel. Her name is Carol. I had said to her, he's so big. How is he like he's so, how is he so sick? And she said, Kiri, he is the biggest baby in here, but he's also the sickest. And they had said like he wasn't responding to anything. He did actually pee. They did tell me he peed on the pediatrician. I know, and I was like, I actually laughed when they told me that he peed on his hands. But yeah, that, you know, hopefully the cooling treatment, they had to do it for 72 hours, which meant that I couldn't hold him. I was able to put my hand into the incubator and touch him, but then I don't know what it was. I wanted to do that all day, every day, but I was afraid when I'd open the little hatch that heat was going to come in, and that was going to prevent the cooling treatment from happening. Like, what goes through your mind is just insane. So I went back down to my room, and then I just they actually had set us up with like a. Like kind of what we're doing now, like a Zoom. So I was able, they had this, it was apparently, it was brought in during COVID when family and friends couldn't visit their babies in NICU, you know, all day, every day. So they put a little camera on the baby's cot, and you could log in and see them, which was so lovely because my room was downstairs, so it was hard to get up there as well. So I went back to my room, and I put him up on the la on my laptop, and I just stared at him until I could go back up again to him the next morning. And I actually had I started pumping for him as well, because I again I thought, like, my breast milk, he'll, that will help him. He'll that, like, that's all he needs, and then he'll be fine. How naive of me to think that, but
It's not naive. It's not
Not
naive at
naive,
all.
and it would have helped him because
Yeah, of
that
course it
is
would.
so full of goodness that it really helped him and kept his little tummy full.
And both myself and Nicole know exactly how you feel in this situation
We
when we,
both did that. We were
yeah,
there.
I know.
You know, you've got a baby in intensive care, and you feel the only thing you can do for that baby is pump your breast milk and deliver it and make sure they get it and that's your way of looking after your baby when you can't do anything else.
Well,
We
yeah, that's the only thing you can do.
can
When
do.
you've got a baby in NICU, like you say, it's you can't hold him, you can't really touch him, or you don't want to because you're worried about letting heat in. Like that's the only thing you feel as a mother that you can give to him. And like all three of us were in that position. I remember texting Jodie like the day Luna was born, saying, "Jodie, what breast pump did you use? What breast feeding bras have you got?" And she sent me all these links, and I just ordered everything and went to Sainsbury's around the corner and got a breast pump because I was like, "Well, got nothing That's else what to I'm
do.
gonna
Just
do.
here pumping." Yeah,
And I
it's not
actually
naive at all.
I loved it as well. I didn't breastfeed my older girls. I tried on Mila, but it wasn't successful, and it didn't happen. And then with Luca, I really wanted to breastfeed this time round, and I actually started collecting my colostrum at about just a few days before he was born. And again, that had gone through my mind as I'm after causing this from collecting colostrum, because I didn't do this on Mila and Gracie, so I must have induced my labor with him, and I made my placenta abrupt. I was looking for everything I did. I was trying to, I was like, it's my fault. I did something to make this happen. So I remember I was actually bringing some breast milk up to NICU, and they were calling me Daisy Moo Cow, because they were like, I couldn't believe how much breast milk I had. And I was so proud. As much as I hated my body at the time for what had happened, I was also really proud of it. I was like, look what my body is producing this for him. It's gonna be fine. He's gonna get my breast milk, and he's going to be fine. So Luca was born on a Thursday, and on the Saturday, we had gone up to see him, which we had done so all day, every day, every chance we could go see him. And they were very, very supportive in NICU and in the hospital in general. They let Luca's grandparents, so my parents and Craig's parents, go up and see him. They could only do two at a time, but that was fine. So it meant someone was with Luca most of the time. On the Saturday morning, they had told us that unfortunately Luca had started having seizures, and they couldn't control the seizures at all. And they had told us that Mila and Gracie could come in and meet Luca. And I remember thinking, this isn't good. If they're letting children come into NICU, because there's signs everywhere saying unfortunately children aren't allowed in NICU. I was like, if they're letting children come into NICU to meet him, I think they know that could possibly be their only chance for the three of them to be together. So Mila and Gracie got to come in on the Saturday and meet their baby brother. And I was like, how? What am I going to explain to them? What am I going to say? Because we didn't know what was going to happen either.
Have you, just to interject, I'm sorry, what are the girls been told up until this point? Have they just been told that their baby brother was here and he was poorly, or had you kept quite a lot of the, obviously, given their ages, all of the details, what you won't have relayed, but what had been said to the girls before this point?
So myself and Craig had been video calling them a lot. And again, so Craig never left my side. Actually, the hospital were incredible with letting Craig stay in the room with me. I think once he had gone home to get extra clothes, but Mila and Gracie weren't there when he'd got home, and we kind of did that purposely. But we had been video calling them and talking to them, and we had told them that Luca was born, but he was very, very unwell. And they were like, what do you mean he's unwell? And we just said that his brain and his heart isn't very strong, because we didn't know how to explain this to them. I
Yeah,
didn't know
of
how to
course.
explain it to myself. I couldn't understand. And that his brain and his little heart was unwell, and that he needed a little bit of support, and they were allowed to come in and see him. And we did tell them that Luca's going to decide whether he wants to stay with us or whether he thinks he'd be better if he goes to heaven. So when they came in to see him on the Saturday, and I have such beautiful videos of them playing with him. At this point, sorry, he wasn't, the cooling treatment had finished, so he was in a regular cot, say, like one that didn't have the hatch, so they were able to touch him. He unfortunately he couldn't come out of it because he was connected to so because he was having seizures. He had so many drips and he had the breathing mask and everything on, so he couldn't come out of his incubator. But I have some lovely videos of the girls playing with him and playing. They're actually playing drive-through with him. So they'd open the little side hatch of the car and order a burger and chips from Luca, and pretend that he'd pass it out to them. And it was just so precious to watch. And I remember thinking, this might be the only time the three of them are going to play with each other. Luca then had an MRI done when the cooling treatment was finished, and he had to have that done in a different hospital. Now
Yeah.
it's literally 10 minutes around the corner from the maternity hospital. We had asked, could we go with him? Unfortunately, I couldn't go because I was still, on I was getting anti-clotting injections, and I was on a lot of medication and stuff. And but they had said, Craig was like, well, I'll go. And they said, Craig, you can go, but unfortunately you can't go into the ambulance with him. And by the time you get there, Luke, he'll probably be finished anyway. So we made a decision that we would both stay in the hospital. We were told that, we were told the risk that he possibly might not survive the trip over. So it was so scary watching him go, not knowing if he was gonna make it back. He was only gone. We got a call like 40 minutes later to say, okay, he's back. Come on up and see him. So we actually made it back up to NICU just as he was being wheeled in. And then like a few minutes later, the pediatrician had came over to us, and she was like, guys, it's not good news. She was like, there's absolutely no brain activity. There's nothing there. They said that with there being no brain activity, he's probably got his organs are probably going to start failing soon. They had spoke about in the be prior to this that if he did survive, his chances of survival were very slim, but if he did survive, he would be severely disabled, with severe cerebral palsy, and he'd be tube fed, he'd be in a wheelchair, he wouldn't be able to talk, he'd be very severely disabled. And I was like, I don't care, it's my baby boy. I'll take him. And because I work in the area of disability, and some of the patients that I work with would have their disability probably was incurred through birth complications, I kind of was like, I love my patients so much, and I know I love Luca so much, so I actually thought to myself, I'm the best person to look at to have a child with a disability because I know what I do. I know how to use a hoist. I know how to manage tube feeds, and I work with adults with epilepsy and stuff. So I was like, I'll be fine. I'll be well able to do this. But unfortunately, that it wasn't the case. So, we then had to make the decision to let Luca decide, his fate. And on Monday, the 13th of May, he was 4 days old, and at 7:30, his breathing tubes and his life support and everything was turned off. He still had some morphine just to kind of keep him comfortable. We were given again another kind of separate private room. All our family got to come in and hold him and talk to him and see him, and Mila and Gracie again came in. And then myself and Craig had just asked everybody to leave. We were like, just let us, we don't know how long we're gonna have with him, so we just want just to be the three of us. And Mila and Gracie really actually struggled with those moments, and it was so traumatic for them. So yeah, at 7:30, Luca's supports were withdrawn, and myself and Craig and Luca, we just sat in this lovely room on a couch, and we played some music and we read to Luca, and he lay on our chests, and at approximately 10:30, he took his last breath while lying on my chest. And I remember just thinking the first sound he ever heard was my heartbeat, and the last sound he ever heard was my heartbeat as well. And it was, I know this is probably going to sound so strange, but you guys will get it, and a lot of your listeners will get it, but it was such a beautiful moment. And I didn't want it to end. And we actually didn't, there was staff right outside our room, but we didn't call them. We were just so relaxed with them, and we knew it was, for those last few hours, his breath had got very, so we had thought he'd taken his last breath, and then we'd listen closely, and then he'd frighten us because he'd go, ah, and we'd hear another one, and but we never heard another one after 10:30. And then at 11 o'clock, Craig went out and got the doctor, and we said, we think he's gone. And the doctor came in and said, we checked him over, and he said, he is, guys, I'm really sorry. And he just said to us, I can, when I walked into this room, I could just feel the love in this room. Sorry, I got so out of breath now.
It's okay. Take
He
time.
was like, I feel the love in this room. And all Luca knew from the moment he was conceived to the moment he grew his wings was love. And he's such a lucky boy to have, to be loved so much. It was just the hardest moment of my life, and even when I'm telling the story, as emotional as I am, I don't feel like I'm telling my story. It's like I'm telling the story of a movie.
Yeah.
Mila and Gracie had gone home from the hospital at this point, because it was so late, and myself and Craig brought Luca back down to my room. So in Ireland, there's an amazing charity called Felacon, and they provide maternity hospitals with the cuddle cots. So the maternity hospitals in Ireland, as far as I know, they don't get them themselves. This charity, Felacon, and Felacon is an Irish word for butterfly, so that's where the name came from. They provide the hospitals with cuddle cots. So Luca was able to come back into the room with myself and Craig, and he was in like a I was he was beside me finally, in the on the bed beside me, and oh, it was, again, it felt normal. It felt like this is how it was supposed to be, him in his cot beside me in the hospital, and he it just looked like he was asleep. He looked so peaceful as well. The next day, then we went home, and again we were able to bring our cuddle cot with us with Luca, so we were able to bring him home then. And then it came to organizing a funeral. I've never had to organize a funeral. I've actually never really been exposed to death before. So my first time really experiencing grief was for my child, my baby. My first time organizing a funeral was for my baby. I was just like, how do I do this? And actually, before we had came home, I had video called Mila and Gracie to let them know that Luca had gone to heaven. That his soul had gone to heaven, but that we were able to bring his precious little body home with us, and we could hold him and make memories with his little body. And he was his soul was watching us from heaven because it was so confusing trying to explain. You know, you tell a child that someone has passed away, but yeah, they're seeing their body, you know. So when Mila and Gracie had came home, I was so scared that they were going to be absolutely petrified, but they weren't. They absolutely adored having them home. Mila, our oldest daughter, she would come in and say good morning to him. She'd say good night to him. She just lo loved going to the end of his cot and just talking to him. Gracie, our 7-year-old, all she wanted to do was hold him the whole time, and she loved having him in the like the little bear hole. She loved having his head on her chest and patting his little bum, and she just wanted to dress him. And she loves babies. She's such a and she loves dollies, and she's always been a little mammy. Yeah, we got to spend. Sorry, now we got home on a Tuesday, and his funeral was a Friday, so Tuesday went to Thursday, Friday. So 3 or 4 days with Luca at home until his funeral was the Friday. And his funeral was Friday, the 17th of May, which was his due date. He was due on the 17th of May, but he obviously came on the 9th of May. And when I had realized that, I was like, oh my God, like his due date is now his funeral date. It's so unfair. And I remember speaking to, I'm not very religious, but like I am Catholic. So we were organizing like a Catholic funeral, and the priest had came to our house, and he had actually said to us that a lot of people don't realize that birth is the closest you'll ever get to life and death at the same time. And I'd never really thought about it like that. Like I had said at the start of our conversation, I really took conceiving a baby, growing a baby, and birthing a baby for granted. You know, I never, and I always thought that once you got to past the 12-week mark, you're fine. You know, I honestly, like, I was 38 weeks and 6 days. I had everything prepared. I had our car seat in the car. The buggy was ready to go in the hall. Luca's nursery was beautifully decorated. And on Mila and Gracie, we didn't have our own house at the time. So I was so excited to finally have my own house and decorate our nursery for him. And we knew he was going to be a boy. So his wardrobe was filled with all boy clothes, and his nursery is for a boy. And I was just so, so excited. And then I had to come home to all of that, his buggy, his car seat, his nursery. We brought him into his nursery. We read to him in there. We put him in the cot beside us, and we put him in the bed beside us. We made some beautiful memories, and we watched, all five of us, we got into my bed, and we watched the movie Luca. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it. It's such a gorgeous movie on Disney.
And it's funny that I've watched that movie today.
Oh,
Honestly, I've watched that
no
movie today
way.
because my daughter has become obsessed with that movie. I must have watched that movie, Luca. And this is just recently, as in probably in the last week and a half, she won't watch anything else. She won't watch anything
Oh
else.
my God.
It's been on in my house today from start to finish.
That's amazing. And it's such a gorgeous film. It's so lovely. And
It
now,
is.
like when I see anything with a fish on it, or that I think of Luca, and it's him giving me a sign as well. And I love the music in the movie, so I play that a lot when I'm in the car. And unfortunately, I haven't been able to watch the movie since.
No.
Yeah, and it is one of our favorite movies. Even before we had Luca, we watched it. And it was when we watched that movie, I was so set on the name Luca. I was like, that's it. I love and I had loved that name I'd actually loved that name from even before I conceived. I was like, if I love the name Luca, if I have a little boy, I really want to call him Luca. And then that movie had came out. It was such a gorgeous movie, and I was like, that's it, that's his name. And then we did wait until we seen him to to confirm that that is his name. And then Luca's funeral was, as I said, his on his due date on the 17th of May, and unfortunately there was a really bad car accident on one of Dublin's in Ireland, our biggest motorways, and the motorway had actually completely shut, and a lot of our family and friends missed Luca's church service. I know, and I was so angry at the world. I was like, I can't even give my baby the send off that he deserves. And the priest had actually missed the crematorium service. So in over here we have a church service, and then we go to the crematorium, which is about a 30-minute drive from where our church service was, and the priest didn't make it. So myself and Craig had to lead the crematorium service, and I just felt so, it was I just so injustice of like why is this going like this? Why can't I even just give him an amazing send off that he deserves? And actually we managed to get Luca's crematorium service on video, and I've watched it back, and I'm so glad that we have that, because watching it actually confirmed to me that it wasn't a mess. It was actually beautiful. And it was so personal because it was me and Craig that went up and spoke. And, it was actually how we wanted it to be. The priest, as amazing and supportive as he was, he didn't know us. So, what better way for, it was just, yeah, for just me and Craig to do it together. And we're obviously coming up to the year mark now, and I cannot believe that it's coming up to a year. It feels like the longest year of my life, but also the quickest year. Feels like it was only yesterday.
You can tap into that, Nicole, can't you?
So we've just had our 2-year anniversary for our daughter on the 5th. Well, that was the anniversary of her death, but her birthday was on the 29th, and it's crazy, like you say, it was so quick yet so slow. Like, oh yeah, it's mad how it
I
goes.
know.
How are you coping coming up to a year? How have you coped this year?
I definitely feel, I actually was asked this question on Friday. I met with a group of like there was six of us bereaved mums. We went for a yoga class, and then we done like a river swim and a sauna class. And I was actually the longest bereaved, and they had asked me, "How are you, Kira? And tell us that we'll be okay." And I had said, I definitely feel stronger now than I did months ago, but it's still so hard. I go to weekly counseling sessions, and that is honestly the best thing that I do for myself. When I was looking into going to counseling, I actually was researching. I wanted to go to someone who had experienced baby loss. And there is that was an option, but it was a good bit away from me, and I didn't want to make going to counseling a chore, where I had to get into the car and be like, oh, I have to drive now for an hour. I want counseling to be an easy experience. Like, I didn't want to make it an effort. And I found an incredible counselor, and she's only 2 minutes down the road from me, and she's just so supportive, and I go to her every week. Felicon also offer monthly group support meetings. So a group of bereaved parents, we all meet up, and we all talk about our babies and our experiences. And I just got so much, I don't know if comfort is the right word, but again, you just feel less alone in that room, and you feel so validated and so seen. And Felicon also provide play therapy to Mila and Gracie as well. They go every week, separate sessions as well. and it's covered by them. It's free of charge. Felacon also do memory boxes, so they done like hand and foot clay prints, the hand and foot ink prints. They provided us with a little beautiful box for a clipping of Luca's hair. Honestly, if it wasn't for Felacon, I don't think they were so supportive.
Thank you to everyone who's listened to the first part of Kira and Luca's story. Their story is one filled with many, many emotions, traumas, experiences, losses, and we felt that we didn't want to cut down or edit anything out of this story. So we have made the decision to split Kira and Luca's story into two parts. So thank you for listening to the first part. Please dial in for episode 14, which details the second part of Kira and Luca's story.